With Long Island local news on Thursday, April 24th, I'm Gianna Volpe on WLIWFM. New York officials joined a lawsuit against President Donald Trump's tariffs yesterday, with Governor Kathy Hochul calling the fees a tax hike that is stirring economic chaos across the country. Hochul and Attorney General Letitia James said the state of New York is joining a legal action with 11 other states in a bid to fight back against the Trump administration slapping tariffs on global imports. Quote, President Trump's reckless tariffs have skyrocketed costs for consumers and unleashed economic chaos across the country. New York is standing up to fight back against the largest federal tax hike in American history, Governor Hochul said. The states want the U.S. Court of International Trade to stop the tariffs, including preventing the president from possibly going forward with additional duties that were paused earlier this month. Officials said the lawsuit argues Trump can't impose tariffs through executive orders and instead needs Congress to also act. David Proper reporting in the New York Post that state leaders warned the tariffs could cause a recession. State agencies would be forced to raise more than $100 million in additional costs because of increased prices, they said. Quote, the president does not have the power to raise taxes on a whim, but that's exactly what President Trump has been doing with these tariffs, AG James said in a statement, adding Donald Trump promised that he would lower prices and ease the cost of living, but these illegal tariffs will have the exact opposite effect on American families, end quote. A new 10% baseline tariff on most imports remains in place while massive reciprocal tariffs are on hold presently to allow for 90 days of negotiations. Other states joining the legal battle are Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maine, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, and Vermont. California Governor Gavin Newsom sued the federal government last week over the tariff plan. The White House has stood by its plan, saying the action would provide a boost to U.S. industries and workers. In other news, the median price among home sales on Long Island, excluding the East End, rose 11.9% to $705,000 in the first quarter, according to new data from Douglas Elliman and Miller Samuel. The median price in the Hamptons increased about 13.3% to a record $2,040,000. Long Island's real estate market continues to suffer from a shortage of listings, which has restrained sales and ratcheted up competition in the market. Jonathan LaMentia reporting in Newsday that in Suffolk County, the median increased to $630,000 during the three-month period. Jonathan Miller, CEO of Miller Samuel, said the Hamptons real estate market received a boost from rising fortunes on Wall Street last year. The average bonus paid to Wall Street employees rose by nearly one-third last year to almost $245,000, and the securities industry in Manhattan saw profits rise 90%. Quote, this market is joined at the hip with the securities industry in New York, Miller said of the Hamptons market, adding, when you have record bonuses per person, that's going to drive demand. On the North Fork, the median price fell 5% to $945,000 compared with the same quarter a year ago among 105 sales. Long Island stands out compared with the rest of the country. Nationally, the number of for sale homes has been rising and home prices have started to grow more slowly. That according to Chen Zhao, head of economics research at real estate brokerage Redfin. Long Island and other Northeast markets have seen stronger price appreciation this year than some Sunbelt areas, particularly in Florida and Texas. Quote, for Long Island, it looks like median sale price growth is quite a bit higher than the country as a whole, end quote. And finally, the town of Southold's zoning update website, southoldzoningupdate.com, has a fresh design, and the long-awaited public review draft of the new code, along with a new interactive map showing how the zoning would change, has been uploaded for the public to see. Beth Young reporting in the East End Beacon that the last time Southold did a major overhaul of its zoning code was in 1971, before planners had begun to understand the isolation of suburban sprawl Four walkable hamlet centers and smart growth principles were part of planners' toolkits. And before words like short-term rentals, solar farms, co-working, and even doggy daycare had entered the planning lexicon, 11 public forums to discuss the code are being scheduled through the upcoming weeks, including meetings focused on each of the hamlets in South Old Town that has a civic association. South Old and Peconic have a combined civic, as do Matatuck and Laurel. Meetings to give a general overview of the zoning update will be held on Monday, May 12th at the South Old Town Recreation Center. That's 970 Peconic Lane in Peconic from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. and via Zoom only on Wednesday, May 14th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Reading the weather in Springs in honor of Joanne Friedland Roberts, joining us to talk about her documentary, The Bonnikers, during Shore Week on WLIWFM, ahead of the 8 p.m. premiere of The Bonnikers on WLIWPBS Channel 21, with a conversation to follow with Hari Srinivasan. Looking like a sunny Thursday in Springs, naturally enough, with a high near 61 degrees, east wind 6 to 8 miles per hour, becoming southeast in the afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear with a low around 51 degrees. Southwest wind around 8 miles per hour. Right now, it's 60 degrees. And where am I going to start? You know what? I'm going to kick it off. I'm jumping Stag's Leap across the playlist past such legends as the Pixies, Mose Allison, and Bobby McFerrin. To land on the Stills Young Band, Long May You Run, the title track of their 1976 record. This one going out to Bob Feinberg. I remember him requesting this song years ago, and I'm playing it for you, Bob, right here on Long Island's only local NPR radio station, WLIWFM. Reminder to folks looking to buy books locally, check out the Cooper's Hall Annex at the Rogers Memorial Library. The library and the friends are together there in the basement of the Cooper's Hall Annex. And thank you for the thank you to Sue Johns. Maybe the Beach Boys have got
got you now.
Sharon Wunderlich and Liz Burns,
with those waves singing Caroline,
who dropped off some beautiful board books for my kiddos.
Rolling down that empty ocean road, get into the surf on time.
Stay tuned for Joanne Friedland Roberts.
Long may you run, long may
I love this track by Air, but I'm going to play 21 Pilots. This is Air Catcher on WLI WFM, Long Island's only local NPR radio station.
But now I'm here.
destroy my heart.
21 Pilots leading you to the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour. It's 1:20 if you're listening to the replay, this edition of The Heart, underwritten by Eastern Long Island Hospital and listeners like you donating to WLIWFM. We want to remind our audience to tune in to WLIWPBS tonight at 8 p.m. for the premiere of the documentary The Bonnickers, immediately followed by a conversation with the filmmakers, like Joanne Friedland Roberts, in the studio with us right now. The Bonnickers is the story of the men and women whose families have been fishing and farming the land and seas of the East End of Long Island for almost 400 years. Families who may well be the last of their kind as they struggle to survive as the Hamptons has evolved. Good morning, Joanne. Thank you so much for being with us.
So lovely to meet you, Gianna.
It is. So this is a long time coming. Because I briefly played with doing a longer format interview show, which I quickly realized I didn't have enough time for. But I got one episode in there of the deep dive with Prudence Carabine, and I remember her mentioning you to me. So this is beautiful that we are here in the studio together. Thank you.
No, absolutely. And excuse me, I remember Prudence telling me that she met you.
Yes.
And in fact, Prudence was one of the first people that I interviewed when
she's
I was doing the interviews on my iPhone.
Yes.
Because
Prudence
is an amazing woman, as you know.
Yes.
So, and you know, she started the East Hampton Historical Farm Museum.
Right.
So I had originally been at LTV because my daughter worked for Jeannie Henderson.
Okay.
And do you know Jeannie?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Jeannie's incredible.
Yes, she
right?
is.
And Jeannie introduced me to her hidden archive that my daughter Lola had been telling me about, of just all these incredible stories of the Baymen and the first families on the East End.
Yeah.
And Jeannie put a bunch of footage together for me on a hard drive, you know, and then said, you know, hey, you should definitely meet Prudence Talmadge Carabine. You should definitely meet Arnold Leo. So,
And speaking of first families, I want to say how grateful I was to hear Mike King, or who was the historian that you spoke with?
Hugh. Hugh's incredible.
Oh,
right?
Man. And he does no BS. He says, if we're going to talk about this area, the Montaukett is the beginning.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's my next film, but we won't go there.
No. Well,
Indigenous population.
Yes, really. And I loved that you had Shane Weeks.
He's
in
amazing.
There.
Yeah.
Talking about also the ways in which this story of fishing and farming the East End is very much intermingled with Indigenous and traditional ways.
No, totally. And I don't know if you've ever walked along Gardner's Bay and seen the pound traps that go out into the harbor. I'd always been really, really curious about them. And, for, you know, they're poles that go out 100 feet, these tall poles connected by nets. And I just like was, what are those things? How do they work? And I was really fortunate to go out with Brent Bennett, who is one of the oldest people out here still fishing. He's not that old. He's only 85.
He's an old bub.
But he is an old bub. He's fantastic. And he told me that those traps had been used by the indigenous population. I mean, those traps have been used for thousands of years. So like you say, Gianna, I mean, the Bonnickers have been here for almost 400 years when their families came over from Kent and Dorset in England. But the indigenous population has been here for 12,000 years, you know. And so that's something that, you know, what drew me to the story of the Bonnickers, among other things, were just their really down-to-earth values.
Oh,
and
God.
Their, right?
Yeah. I got to say, James Bennett, I was nearly in tears.
I was in tears, too.
Because he talks very, very honestly and very candidly about the fight to stay, the losing fight.
Exactly.
And his note about, I don't know if it's going to be here for 20 more years.
Right.
You know, and I understand, and I felt badly because there's the woman, Miss Miller, who's saying, you know, well, I don't understand why people don't just stay. And it's certainly not everyone's circumstances are the same.
No, totally.
And I can't imagine that everyone is leaving that easily.
Well, I mean,
it's not a case of like, let's cash out and go.
No, I mean, like in Debbie's situation, I mean, her family had a lot of land that she was able to donate to the land trust and get money back in return. So it's been a little bit easier for the farmers than it has been for the fishermen. And Prudence was the first person who told me that. She comes from a farming family. You know, the farmers could sell off their land.
Right.
In Jimmy's case, Jimmy Bennett, you know, when we went out on his boat, he said, you know, this is my office. This is where I work. And it's getting harder all the time.
Right.
And, you know, when you had tears in your eyes, I mean, you know, just interviewing him, listening to him, hearing him say, you know, he had to go to drive out to Riverhead to go shopping. You know, it was just he works another job. He's just doing the best he can. But, you know, this is his history.
Right.
And, you know, I've done a lot of community gatherings in related to the Bonnekers documentary, too. And the last one we did at the Springs Historical Society and Library, Jimmy brought all his old clam rakes, his family's clam rakes. You know, he has an amazing collection.
Right.
You know, and it's a tradition. I mean, and the Bonnekers really value tradition. They value family. They value continuity. They value the things that we should all value, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's amazing stuff. Can you talk about finding your sources, starting the documentary in the first place?
Absolutely. You know, I started out as a teacher. Then I became a television producer.
Where were you?
When I taught, at Sands Point Country Day School.
Okay.
Right down on Long Island. And then my dad had worked in the television industry, and he'd taken me to all of the television conferences, and I really wanted to work in television. And I said, Dad, how do I do this? What do I study in college? He's like, you're just a girl. Get a job as a teacher. So being a good girl at that time, which I'm certainly not anymore, I listened but it was a good thing because being a teacher steeped me in a desire to share what I was learning.
You can change the world as a teacher.
Absolutely.
Because you are the voice that is telling a young girl, you can do whatever you want.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And follow your dreams.
Absolutely, which is certainly the message I gave to my own daughter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is, so then I was lucky enough to be, because I was a teacher, to start producing at Children's Television Workshop, which is now
Fantastic.
Sesame Workshop.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That was amazing.
Stop.
No,
tell
totally.
Me more. What?
Yeah, I'd go out on 3-2-1 Contact, and we'd film How Do Airplanes Fly? Why does the Great Lake rise and fall? You know, just all these learning things that were shared with kids all over the country. And then when I turned 40, I started my own production company. And the first show that I created was an invention game show for kids.
Cool.
That was cool. And I worked with schools all over the country. And it's getting kids to create new inventions to be on our show. It's kind of like, I was thinking the other day, it was like Shark Tank before Shark Tank, but everybody was nice because it wasn't a bunch of VCs who were funding the projects. It was kids showing their inventions to a studio audience of other kids.
That's so fun.
It was really fun.
I love that. And it gets kids thinking.
Yeah.
And kids have good ideas.
Kids have great ideas. I mean, there are a lot of automatic dog feeders, you know, two-man skateboards, basketball hoops that went up and down. You know, really like kid-inspired things.
This is what we care about. Really. I remember doing one, and I invented a hat that you could spray, like, bug spray out of.
That's cool. Yeah.
Which isn't great because it's going to come down in your face. But you know, maybe there's a little protection.
No, totally. Hats with the heads, visors, sunglasses. You know, a lot of these things have actually been produced, right? But so, and then I started an internet company and started building communities. So, like, my thing is always that, you know, I like to learn new things. I like to create programming around those things and then build community.
Yeah.
So that's
we
what
love
I,
this.
No, it's been amazing. And I've been really fortunate to be able to do that with the Bonnekers because, you know, went back to when I started with my iPhone and Prudence and Arnold Leo, I was just out there, you know, taking videos of people, and I started recording all these amazing stories, and I thought, you know, I really want to do this in a real way, in a more kind of, in a way that will look better on television than, say, all these things that I shot on my iPhone. And so...
iPhones are amazing, by the way. I always joke, like, oh, these things are putting photojournalists like me out of work every day.
In a certain way.
But that was at a point.
Yeah.
And now I'm more inclined to think these things are helping photojournalists and documentarians like us.
No.
Because quality that you can produce. I've seen... photos of mine printed as large as you can print a photo in a newspaper or a magazine.
Oh, I want to see your photos.
But clear as day.
Yeah.
And the video is great too. And it enables you to be nimble and to get things that you would not have been able to.
A million percent.
To pull out your DSLR.
A million percent. And so I did probably record about 10 interviews on my iPhone. Some of those interviews are actually... still in the documentary. Mm. And along the way, through doing these community gatherings and applying for a grant from the New York Foundation of the Arts so that I was able to get them to be a fiscal sponsor, and that money that I raised was tax deductible by the people who became the contributors, you know? So that was really incredible too.
I am just pulling up because one of the things that was most fun to see. I remember interviewing back in 2021. Let me see what the date was. From one of the Bennetts. And I was hearing about from Clint Bennett and Kim. And they were talking about the striper protest.
Oh, yeah.
And about Billy
Joel. The Bass
Wars. Yes.
Absolutely. That's
and
in the
getting
film,
to see
saw.
Getting to see the footage from that. Can you talk about some of this archival footage that you were able to find?
Absolutely. So some of it was from LTV's archive. The
amazing
historic
stuff
archive,
that they have there.
And then some of it, Jeannie also introduced me to this amazing filmmaker, Sharon Ames. And Sharon, you should interview her. She's incredible.
I would love to.
So she had done all these interviews at the Baymans Association. And she shot the majority of that footage of the Bass Wars. And, you know, so Arnold Leo was the secretary and treasurer of the Baymans Association back in the day. And he was one of the people... who, along with John Ames.
I was going to say, isn't one of the Ames
John Ames. I mean, they would go up to Albany.
And you have Men's Lives in there,
which was, well, I'll tell you about in a minute, which is another huge inspiration for me. But so they would go up to Albany, they'd be protesting all these regulations, and they would get nowhere. And what Arnold said was, you know, it was because we were pitted against the sports fishermen, and the sports fishermen had all the money. So they had all the politicians behind them. So the Baymen kept losing the battle. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, they were able to hang on. And Men's Lives, which was written by Peter Matheson and created by Adelaide de Manille, was really and Adelaide hired about 10 photographers to photograph those stories. And that was really an elegy to the Baymen. And that was back in the 80s. So many of the people, and my dad actually gave me the book back in the 80s when we lived at Louse Point, but many of the people that are in Men's Lives shared their stories with me. The ones who are still around, like Don Ames' partner, Calvin Lester, lived right on the street opposite Brent's food market is, and on Hump Path. And I interviewed his daughter, Kelly Lester, there.
Yes.
Kelly's son, Will Lester, who's also
Loved Will.
You know, he's amazing.
He was probably my favorite part.
Because he's so honest,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And his dad, Todd, is my next door neighbor, Todd Bennett. And his grandpa, Dave Bennett.
That's just
Cars Decoys. I mean, you know, so these are some amazing human beings.
And I want to return to you talking about a losing battle, because I was, I learned a lot about how impossible the future of commercial fishing has become when the restrictions are such that you can't even get a new license unless you can show, 3 years of selling at a certain amount.
Right. But then it costs a lot of money to have the equipment and the truck. I mean, yeah, Charlie Nichols was talking about that in the documentary, right? And he said his sons are lucky because they got the license passed on to them, but they don't necessarily want to be out fishing because they see how hard it is. And as you say, it's dwindling numbers of people who can still afford to make a living on the bay. Now, part of it, I mean, you know, you saw Brent Bennett with his ruler, right?
Yes.
Measuring the fish, if it's like less than a quarter of an inch too big or small, he's got to throw it back in. Mm-hmm. Really? Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't make any sense to him.
That's something that, you know, I remember speaking to, and his name is escaping me, of course, now, but one of the guys from out in Montauk, a lobster fisherman, talking about, I think it's maybe blackfish or black bass.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how the babies, the juveniles, eat baby lobsters and about how their numbers are abundant, but the restrictions had been made at a certain point. And even though they're seeing what's out there, you know, those numbers are not. And then you hear that same conversation going on decades ago. It seems like there's a bit of a divorce between people that are setting the requirements or the rule, you know, the restrictions, and what's going on out on the water, which you hear echoed by Shane Weeks.
Like Shane says, I mean, you have to do it sustainably,
right?
Because you don't want to overfish. You know, you don't want the fish to go the way of the whale,
right,
and disappear. But as you're also 1,000,000% right that the regulations are
may not be.
They change every day, but they're not based on talking to the fishermen, understanding what's really going on, being there. There needs to be more kind of collaboration,
right,
between people who are making the regulations. There need to be probably fewer regulations, and you know, it just in order for people to be able to stay. Like Will said, he wants to fish till the day he dies. And I hope he will. He's only 21 or 2 or 3 right now. So that's hopefully a very long way off. And hopefully.
And you know what's a nice note is Dr. Dish, that seems like a new company.
Yeah.
Well, coming in? Tell me about Dr. Dish.
Yeah, Dr. Dish is really interesting. And it's based out of where Inlet Seafood is in Montauk.
Yeah.
That dock is owned by a group of fishermen, fishing families.
Yeah.
And the Dock to Dish movement was started because now, I don't know, I didn't know this when I started filming, the majority of fish that we eat out here has to go to what used to be called the Fulton Fish Market downtown is still the Fulton Fish Market, but it's now
And then it comes back?
Yeah.
That reminds me of the issue that we've had with processing animals. For example, Yaphank being the only facility on island, and often folks have to go up to Rhode Island or, you know, to process the meat to bring it back. There's only, very few places to do so on island. So I remember the young woman from Inlet Seafood.
Amanda Jones. Yeah.
Yes, talking about, you know, processing here.
No, absolutely. And that's a huge thing because there are no processing plants here. And there certainly should be. I mean, it makes total sense, right? And so, you know, what Dr. Dish is doing now, where they can buy the fish directly from the fishermen. They're going to start going to pick it up from fishermen because, as Casey Boyle was saying, you know, it's a long trip for people like who are living even in East Hampton to have to go out to Montauk every day and bring them the fish that they catch. But Dr. Dish wants to bring it, to pick it up from them and then sell it locally to restaurants out here, sell it to probably in more stores out here. And I hope that they can build on that. You know, there's, but it would, you know, one of the things that Barley Dunn, who's John Barley John Dunn, who runs the East Hampton Town Shellfish Fishery, you know, yes. down at the town dock. And they're very involved with aquaculture mm-hmm. and seeding the harbor with
right.
new clams and oysters. And one of the things that he's been thinking about doing is to open a processing plant. So I hope that happens.
I hope so too.
I know. Let's go. Let's go open one.
All right. So we probably got to go play some music.
Right.
Before we do that, what haven't we talked about, Joanne, that you want to make sure folks know about the Bonnickers or about the documentary ahead of tonight's premiere on WLIW PBS 21? And I hope folks will stay tuned at 9 for your conversation with Hari Srinivasan as well.
Yeah, well, I really want people to understand the deep values of the community, of the Bonnickers, and how important their way of life is. You know, most of us came out here because of the beauty of the land, the farms, the fishing industry, and just, you know, unfortunately, gentrification has pretty much taken over and is squeezing a lot of the Bonnickers out. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people should come up with ways to create better housing or to just figure out something that enables us all to live in the same community mm-hmm. together. And I'm really happy to be able to share the culture of the Bonnickers because many of my friends out here have never heard of the Bonnickers,
and
even
I
though
hope,
they live
I
here.
I hope folks will support.
Yeah.
You know, the more that you can buy from those who are producing locally, the better off all will be. I'm Gianna Volpe. That was Joanne Friedland Roberts. Again, tonight at 8 p.m., WLIW PBS Channel 21 at 8 o'clock, and then a replay at 7 a.m. on Sunday, April 27th. Is the Bonnickers families who have fished and farmed the east end of Long Island for almost 400 years, now struggling to survive in the Hamptons. They hold on to tradition in spite of ever-increasing obstacles. Follow their sagas as we head out onto their boats and into the bays, into their pickup trucks, farms, and fields. And after the broadcast ends at 9 o'clock, stay tuned for director Joanne Friedland Roberts' conversation with Hari Srinivasan. I'm Gianna Volpe. That was Joanne. Let's see. This is Spoon, and you, whoever you are out there, you are awesome, and you're listening to Long Island's only local NPR radio station, WLIWFM.
Tragic is
just want to cut out a little bit. I want to get these tracks in. This is, we got Dirty Heads, Dirty Radio, and Don Henley to lead you into the NPR News Break. Special shout out to Sam Hamilton, Amelia Garner, and Julian Alvarez for all they did to help the Bonnickers come to you tonight on WLIW PBS, Channel 21, 8 o'clock tonight. From Dirty Heads to Dirty Radio, this is True Love on WLIWFM. Dirty Laundry leading you into the NPR News Break. Little Don Henley on WLIWFM.
And it's all my thoughts that brought me here to find. Knowing your peace was all that I was missing. Even though we don't always see eye to eye. I'm loving you blind with 2020 vision. And I wish that I could play back time. Hit the rewind and watch it.
much as this.
It's true, love is all I need. And all I need is you loving me. It's true, love is all I need. And all I need is you loving me.
You read my mind. Only the future, baby, that's a mission. And with all the stories, we read through the lines. Making the most with all that we were given. And I wish that I could play back time. Hit the rewind and watch it all again. Call me a fool, cause I just fantasize. Nothing in life is worth as much as this. It's true. Love is all I need, and all I need is you loving me. If true love is all I need, and all I need is you loving me. If true love is all I need,
true love,
and all I need is
all
you
I
loving
need.
Me. If true love is all I need,
is it all I need?
All I need is you loving me.
Big thanks to Dr. Bernie Furschpahn and Joanne Friedland Roberts, as well as our underwriter Eastern Long Island Hospital, for joining us and being with us and supporting us. I'm Jana Volpe. This is Don Henley, and you, whoever you are out there, you are awesome, and you're listening to WLIWFM, the heart of the East End, featuring music from all decades and genres and interviews with folks from all walks of life. All because of you, the listener.